Okay, so dear Venerable Sir, an ancient Buddhist debate among the different schools was, where is karma stored? Is this a case of too much speculative metaphysic philosophy, or is there something to be gained through this line of inquiry? One of the things that comes out of these kind of debates, when people debated where is karma stored, what often really comes out is a lot of controversy about the idea of non-self. Because once you talk about a storage place, you know, they have in certain other schools of Buddhism, they have the idea of the alaya vijnana, I think it's called, the storage consciousness, or the consciousness where things settle down. And once you get into those kind of areas, you tend to get into very complex debates about whether this really is non-self, whether it accords with the Buddhist teachings of non-self, or whatever. So actually, very often these debates don't actually lead anywhere. They have been debating this for 2,500 years. They still haven't come to a conclusion about these things, right? So we probably can go on for another 2,500 years. So it may just be that this keeps you stuck in samsara, right? It may just keep on arguing. And, you know, the moment you die, you're still wondering about this. I've wondered about this consciousness. That gives rise to the rebirth in the realm of the argumentative devas or something. And you continue your arguments in that realm. And so it continues and goes on forever. So I think probably not. I think that particular question is one of those very intractable, very difficult questions. If nobody has solved it over the last 2,500 years, lots of brilliant minds out there, right? Don't underestimate some of these monastics and perhaps even lay people who were arguing these things. People like Nagarjuna, people like Buddhaghosa, people like all of these other philosophers that were there. And if they couldn't figure it out, chances that we can is probably quite slim. So unless you think that you are a brilliant philosopher and an extraordinarily brilliant mind who can come up with some fascinating new things, I'd probably say best avoid that particular question.
ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා මේ අතීතේ ඉඳන්ම ගුරුකුල අතර මේ කර්මය තැන්පත් වෙලා තියෙන්නේ කොහෙද කියන ප්‍රශ්නය සාකච්ඡා කරලා තියෙනවා. ඉතින් අනාත්ම ඉගැන්වීමක් තුළ කොහොමද කර්මය තැන්පත් වෙලා තියෙන්නේ කියන මේ කාරණාව පිළිබඳ පහුගිය අවුරුදු 2000 ගාන තිස්සේම සාකච්ඡා කරලා තියෙනවා. ඒත් තාමත් මේ අවසාන උත්තරයකට ඇවිල්ලා නැහැ. ඉතින් මේ උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා මේ ප්‍රශ්නය පැත්තකින් තියෙන එක හොඳයි කියලා.
One of the problems is that we don't really have a very good understanding even of the mind. You know, not even the mind itself is kind of very obscure within modern scientific community. People think of the mind or consciousness as just a byproduct of material phenomena and all of these kind of things. And because of that, even our understanding of the mind in the modern world, the Buddhist thing is different. But in our modern understanding is very, very poor. So because of that, it is not easy to create good theories about memory and karma and these kind of things. Perhaps if science ever kind of comes to a different understanding of the mind as consciousness, as one of the basic constituents of reality, perhaps maybe that will happen one day. Maybe then we can move on with these kind of questions.
අපිට සිත ගැනවත් තාම හරියාකාර වැටහීමක් නැහැ. බුද්ධාගමේ හිත ගැන තියෙන කාරණායි දැන් නවීන මනෝවිද්‍යාවාදීන් හොයාගෙන තියෙන කාරණායි අතර නොයෙක් තත්ත්ව තියෙනවා, නොයෙක් වෙනස්කම් තියෙනවා මතකය පිළිබඳව ආදී වශයෙන්. ඉතින් අපි මේ ප්‍රශ්නය තව පසුවට කල්තබමු කියලයි ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියන්නේ.
Okay, so next question. Dear Venerable Sir, today regarding the Dhammacakka Sutta, you mentioned the extreme austerities the Bodhisattva practiced. Was the Bodhisattva a Jain? Also, in the Dhammacakka Sutta, the Buddha teaches the First Noble Truth as the five aggregates subject to clinging, without explaining in detail exactly what these aggregates are. Were the five aggregates a pre-Buddhist idea? Okay, so the first one is the question, was the Bodhisattva a Jain? And it's a very good question, isn't it? It's actually a very valid question, I think. And it's quite plausible that he, even though he may not have been a Jain himself, that he certainly practiced practices that were very close to Jain ideas. That is certainly possible. But remember, it was a very complicated in those days. It is true that the Jains practiced austerities, but it wasn't just the Jains. There were also probably people who were practicing in the Brahmanical religion as well, who also practiced austerities. Austerity was quite common. But obviously the Jains were the most severe of those people. So quite possible that that the Bodhisattva was practicing as a Jain for a period in life.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා බෝධිසත්වයන් වහන්සේ ජෛනෙක්ද කියලා. මොකද බෝධිසත්වයන් වහන්සේ මේ අර ශරීරයට දුක් දීමේ වා පුහුණු කළා ජෛන අයත් ඒවා පුහුණු කරනවා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියනවා බෝධිසත්වයෝ ටික කාලයකට ඒවා පුරුදු කළා තමයි. ඒ වගේම ශරීරයට දුක් දීමේ මේ වැඩ පිළිවෙලවල ජෛනයන්ට විතරක් අදාළ ඒවා නෙවෙයි. බ්‍රාහ්මණික ආගම්වල අනිත් බ්‍රාහ්මණ ආගම්වලත් ශරීරයට දුක් දීමේ ඒ දේවල් තියෙනවා.
Okay, so the second aspect of this question, or the second part of it, is in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Buddha talks about the five aggregates without explaining them. So is it possible that this was a pre-Buddhist idea? I guess your question is, well, how could these ascetics understand what he was talking about, right? He just mentioned these five aggregates out of the blue, and kind of they were probably, if they had no idea what they were, they would have been completely nonplussed. What's going on? They don't understand anything here. So, but it's interesting, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the way it is found in the Pali Canon is actually quite different from how it is found in other lineages of Buddhism, and it varies quite a lot depending on the lineage. For example, in certain schools, the first teaching that Buddha gives is the middle way, right? Talks about the two extremes. Then he stops and a long time passes by, and then he gives the teachings afterwards on the Four Noble Truths. So one step at a time. It's more stage-wise. In the Pali version, it looks like he teaches everything at the same time. But I suspect the Pali version can be just a condensation of something that happened over a fairly long period of time. And that may explain what is happening, right? First of all, he teaches the middle way, then perhaps he gives some other teachings which aren't really recorded, and then it is all kind of summarized as the Four Noble Truths down the line. So I think there is many possibilities there for why this teaching actually would have worked, even if there wasn't any explanation in details. That is one possibility. I don't think there is any record of the five aggregates, the five personality factors being a pre-Buddhist teachings. I don't think they existed in the Brahmanical teachings, the Upanishads and that sort of thing. I don't think that's part of that teaching. They had ideas such as Nama-Rupa and that kind of thing, but not the five khandhas as far as I'm aware. But of course, we don't know that much about the cultural environment in those days. We don't know so much about the teachings of the various schools. The little that we know is what is found in the Pali Canon, right? And often very stereotyped. This is kind of the Buddhist idea, the Buddhist take, and what other people were teaching here. And it's quite likely that that is not very, you know, the Buddhists would not have taken the most flattering part. They would have taken the things that they probably disagreed with, right? And put that in there and say, well, this isn't correct or whatever. So because of that, we don't know that much about what they were teaching. So it is conceivable, but I think there are other solutions as well to this problem.
ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා මේ පංච උපාදානස්කන්ධය බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේට කලින් ඉඳන් තිවිච්ච ඉගැන්වීමක්ද කියලා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියනවා එහෙම කියන්න විදිහක් නැහැ කියලා. අනිත් එක පංච උපාදානස්කන්ධය ගැන ධම්මචක්කපවත්තන සූත්‍රයේ පැහැදිලි කිරීමක් නැහැ කියලා සඳහන් වුණා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියනවා බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ මුලින්ම මධ්‍යම ප්‍රතිපදාව දේශනා කළා, පස්සේ අවස්ථාවකදී චතුරාර්ය සත්‍ය දේශනා කරන්නට ඇති, පස්සේ කාලයකදී මේ සියල්ල එකතු කරලා ධම්මචක්කපවත්තන සූත්‍රයේ වශයෙන් සකස් කරන්නට ඇති කියලා කියනවා. මොකද වෙනත් බෞද්ධ ගුරුකුලවල ධම්මචක්කපවත්තන සූත්‍රයේ ඒ වගේ වෙනස්කම් තියෙන නිසා උන්වහන්සේ ඒ වගේ අදහසක්
Okay, so this is just something about noble silence, and somebody's asking that if we can have a bit more silence, please. And it's just one of the things I would recommend you to do is it's always nice to give the people around you the gift of being silent and quiet. Because sometimes on a retreat like this, you find there's some people who really enjoy the peace, who really get nice results in meditation practice. It is always like that. So when you are silent as well, you're giving other people the gift of that silence. What a beautiful thing that is. Sometimes we feel that silence can be oppressive, especially if not used to it. But if you feel that it is a gift that you're giving to others, it becomes something very beautiful that also enhances your own practice. So try to think of it like that. And then when you are around other people, it's easier to keep silent as a consequence. So if you really need to talk, it's perfectly fine. But maybe find a place where there is nobody around, we're not disturbing anybody. And then hopefully that will kind of increase the environment for everybody. And everybody will blossom even more, right? Have even more happiness in the teachings. What a wonderful thing that is. Try and see if that works. And otherwise, I'm sure we will, whatever problems there are, we will forgive that as well.
ආර්ය නිශ්ශබ්දතාවයේ කියන එක තවදුරටත් වැඩි කරන්න පුළුවන්ද කියලා මේ ප්‍රශ්නය අහලා තිබුණේ. මේ ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියනවා එහෙම කරන්න පුළුවන් නම් හොඳයි කියලා කතා කරන්න අවශ්‍ය නම් පැත්තකට ගිහිල්ලා අනිත් අයට කරදරයක් නැති විදිහට කතා කරන්න පුළුවන් තරම් තමන්ට අනුන්ට තමන්ගෙන් යහපතක් සිද්ධ වෙන විදිහට උදව්වක් වෙන විදිහට ගත කරන්න කියලා උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා කාටවත් කරදරයක් නොවන විදිහට ඉන්නවනම් භාවනාවෙන් හොඳ ප්‍රතිඵල බොහෝ දෙනාට ලබා ගන්න පුළුවන් ඒ නිසා නිහඬ බව අගය කරනවා අනිත් අයට කරදරයක් නොවන පිළිවෙලට කතා කරනවා නම් ඒක තමයි හොඳ පැත්තකට ගිහිල්ලා වගේ කතා කරනවා නම් ඒක තමයි හොඳ
Okay. So the next question here, Bhante, you explained about sankharas directing the next birth and karma placing the vijnana on a realm at birth. How does the asanya karma play in this? Can both above be superseded by asanya karma? Sadhu. Not sure what you mean by asanya karma. Not sure what you mean by that. Is it asanya? Is it some other word? Asanya? I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. Maybe if you can rephrase the question somehow and ask it again tomorrow, maybe I can reply to it. I'm not entirely certain what you mean by that. Maybe it's some term I'm not familiar with or something like that. So we'll try again. Maybe try again tomorrow. Devante, can you please say a little about the relationship of ignorance and delusion, avidya, and the vipalasas, the distortions of view, perception, and thought? Are the vipalasas the active expression of avidya? Thank you for your very clear and vivid exposition, which is also very practical and applicable. Sadhu. Okay, that's very kind. I do recognize the handwriting of some of these questions, I have to admit. So it's because I know some of the people here already, of course. So can I say something about the relationship between avidya and the vipalasas? So first of all, the vipalasas is a teaching you find in the, not all that much in the suttas, but you find one sutta about in Anguttara 4, which talks about vipalasa means like a distortion, right? A perversion of reality, not seeing things clearly. And the distortion happens in regard to, as you say here, three things: perception, thoughts, and views. And the distortions are usually seeing what is dukkha as sukha, seeing what is impermanent as permanent, seeing what is asubha as asubha, seeing what is anatta as atta. So these are basically the distortions. And yes, I would say that you could perhaps argue this is the active aspect of avidya. I think that is maybe a nice way of looking at that. So avidya expresses itself in these particular distortions. I think there's also a lot of overlap. I guess it depends on whether we can maybe say that the distortions are active or inactive, perhaps. But certainly the active aspect of the distortions would be how the ignorance actually manifests in reality. I think that is a good way of looking at it. So I guess one point that also comes out of this, it shows you that avidya, it shows a bit more about the breadth of avidya, how kind of deep it goes, right? It's not just about how we view the world as only one aspect. It's our entire thinking process is distorted. Our very basic perceptions of reality, from the moment you kind of, all day basically, everything you feel, everything you see is distorted because of these vipalasas. Every perception is distorted in one way or another. And that is why it is so hard to break, because it is so inherent to how we understand the world. We are like the fish in water, or the tadpole in water, who has never been out of water before, always deluded, always seeing things in the wrong way. Sometimes the delusion is a bit stronger, sometimes a bit weaker, but the delusion is always there. And hopefully the job of us, of a Buddhist, of a monastic, or even a layperson, is to become a frog, right? So we are a tadpole in the water, you want to become a frog so we can jump out of that water. So anyone who is keen on becoming a frog, you've come to the right place. The Buddhist path to froghood. So you're getting out of the water, and we can see the world in a different way. As long as you're in the water, you cannot understand what water is all about. So this is one of the things it shows us, how incredibly it permeates our entire psychological makeup, from the most basic perceptions to the most advanced of views.
මේ ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහලා තියෙනවා විපල්ලාස සහ අවිද්‍යාව අතර තියෙන සම්බන්ධය පැහැදිලි කරන්න කියලා. උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා සූත්‍රවල වැඩිපුර විපල්ලාස ගැන සඳහනක් නැහැ. ඒ වුණාට අංගුත්තර නිකාය එක්තරා සූත්‍රයක මේ සංඥා විපල්ලාස, දිට්ඨි විපල්ලාස, චිත්ත විපල්ලාස ගැන සඳහන් වෙනවා. ඇත්තම මේ නිත්‍ය සුභ සුඛ ආත්ම වශයෙන් ගැනීම සිද්ධ වෙන්නෙම විපල්ලාස නිසායි. ඒ අනුව අවිද්‍යාව සහ විපල්ලාස අතර විශාල සම්බන්ධයක් තියෙනවා. අපේ ජීවිතය සම්පූර්ණයෙන් වගේ විපල්ලාස වලින් විකෘති වෙලා තමයි තියෙන්නේ. විපල්ලාස වලින් කොයිතරම් අපි ඒවයි බැසගෙන ඉන්නවද කියනවා නම් හරියට අපි වතුරක ගිලිලා ඉන්නවා වගේ, විපල්ලාස නැමැති වතුරක ගිලිලා ඉන්නවා වගේ. ඉතින් හරියට වතුරෙන් මේ ගෙම්බෙක් අහකට පනිනවා වගේ අපිට ඒ විපල්ලාස වලින් අහකට පැන ගන්න වෙලා තියෙනවා. දැන් මේ අපි ඉන්න මේ අවස්ථාව ටිකක් අන්න ඒ වගේ අහකට පැන ගන්න තියෙන අවස්ථාවක්. ඉතින් මේ විපල්ලාස සහ අවිද්‍යාව අතර විශාල සම්බන්ධයක් තියෙනවා. ඒ දෙකෙන් එක වගේම සිත එකිනෙක මත රඳාපවතින දේවල් දෙකක් වගේ අවිද්‍යාව සහ විපල්ලාස.
Okay, so the next question, this is a very practical question. It's good to have practical questions. I really like that, because I guess this is one of the main reasons why we're here, to kind of encourage our practice, right? And I apologize if my teachings sometimes veer a little bit too much on the theoretical side. I hope it isn't too much. I hope we can find a nice balance on this retreat. So anyway, this is one of those questions. How can I overcome regret, as I have many regrets in my life, and it hampers my reaching samadhi when meditating? So very, very good question, and a very important one probably. We all have regrets, some more than others perhaps, so the problem is really for all of us. And one of the things, of course, is to recognize that you regret things, right? You understand that you actually, this affects you. When you do something which isn't quite right, when you have thought, perhaps even an unwholesome thought or whatever, it leaves a residue inside of you. And this is the first teaching you can get from this. And just by understanding that much, it kind of gives you more encouragement to do what is right in the future. So this is the first thing. The second thing to do is always to remind yourself that, yes, you did many bad things perhaps in your life. We all have done some bad things. But remember that you are allowed to forgive yourself on the Buddhist path. Remember that most people, the reason they do bad things is not because they want to be bad. I mean, who wants to be bad? It's crazy to want to be bad. I think we all understand deep down that to be good, to have a good heart, to do the right thing. We all know this leads to happiness, right? Deep down, we all know that. Nobody really wants to be bad. So if you did something bad, it was because of ignorance. It was because of delusion. It was because of habits you have taken with you from earlier on in life, perhaps from past lives. So you were programmed to do those things. You didn't really have much choice, right? You feel, the reason that you have regrets is because you feel that I really had a choice, I could have done things differently. The sense of self intrudes and says, yes, it was your responsibility, you were a bad person, right? This is what the sense of self says. But please recognize that even though you cannot see through the delusion of the self 100%, you can see through a lot of it. You can understand that you are a conditioned person. You can understand how conditioning works on all of us and how powerful it is. And when you start to understand how powerful it is, you can start to let go of that regret. It reminds me of a story which to me was very powerful, which I always like to tell and which I think I told here last year as well. This was a story of this man in Perth who had this experience of remembering a past life, or at least he thought it was a past life. This was one of those hypnotic regression things, and of course they're very uncertain and very unreliable and all that, fair enough. But he had all his memories from a past life. Then he went to check the public records, and many of those memories, actually the vast majority of them, they checked out with the public records of a particular person, right? Lots of very detailed things like names and places where he lived and all that kind of stuff. And he, whatever the truth is, he became absolutely convinced that this was him in a past life. And what was the most interesting thing that he said about this was he said that he is now quite a successful businessman in Perth. He's selling some kind of software to the mining industry, right? In Western Australia, everything is about the mining industry in Western Australia, and he's selling the software to the mining industry here. And he felt, wow, I'm so proud. I've done really well. I've built up this business for myself. It all comes from me, right? I wanted this. I wanted to build this up. And then he said, he looked into his past life, and he had had exactly the same personality in the past life. He had come, he was a very poor migrant from Ireland. Ireland was a very destitute country in the 19th parts of the 19th century, and that's why there's so many Irish emigrants around the world. They kind of went all over the world. Massive Irish communities in the US, very large Irish community also in Australia. And he was one of these Irish immigrants to Australia, and he built up this farm in the southwest of Australia, built it all up with his two hands through very, very hard work, right? Really putting himself into it. And when he was on his deathbed, he felt a sense of satisfaction. I have lived my life well. I have built up a business through hard work, through really applying myself. And when he saw that, he realized that his hard work in this life had nothing to do with him, nothing to do with him wanting to build up a business, nothing to do with him choosing to actually do this. It was all the conditioning coming from the past life. He had always been like this. He had been programmed in the past to work hard, right? This was who he was as a person. He was just following the habitual patterns that had been built up in a past life. And he said that when he saw that, he felt a sense of aversion, right? I don't want to work like this anymore. I'm trapped. This is not freedom of choice. I'm not choosing to do this at all. I'm just playing out this program that was written somewhere deep, deep, deep in the past. He didn't know whether it was in the past life, probably lifetimes and lifetimes before that, that these habits were acquired. And when he saw that, he felt a sense of, yuck, this is terrible, I don't want this anymore. And he understood basically how conditioned he was as a person. So remember stories like that, look at the conditioning in your own life, and you start to understand that you are running on a program from the past. If you did bad things before, it wasn't so much that it was your choice, you were just playing out things, playing out a program that was written somewhere deep, deep, deep in your past. And then it is so much easier to forgive yourself as a consequence. So these other ways, this is using the teaching of anatta to help you to overcome these kind of problems. And then, of course, the last thing, and this is the very important simile that is found in the suttas, the simile of the lump of salt, which I'm sure you know about already, very famous simile from the suttas, found in the Anguttara Nikaya 3's 101 or thereabouts, the Lonapala Sutta. And the Lonapala Sutta says that if you take a lump of salt, a certain amount of salt, and you put it in the glass of water, the water becomes undrinkable because it's so incredibly salty. The salt is the bad karma you have made. The amount of water is the good karma. And the result is very bitter, very salty because of that. If you take the same amount of salt, and I think in the sutta it says you put it in the river Ganges, but let's say, not the river Ganges, but the big pond, right, something like that. You put it in there, and you taste it, and there's very, very little taste left of that salt. Again, the salt is the bad karma, the amount of water is the good karma. So you just have to keep on practicing, right? And you have to keep on doing the good things. And if you are kind and gentle in your life, if you keep on treating people well by body, speech, and also by mind, it won't take long before that mass of water, the body of water, expands, right? And as it expands, that regret starts to fade into the background. The results of the bad karma starts not to taste so bad anymore, and it all fades away, and all you can really remember at that point is the goodness that you have done instead. So this is the power of good action. The power of good action makes you feel good now. It dilutes the bad karma of the past, right? It has a very powerful effect.
ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා පසුතැවීමෙන් ගොඩ එන්නේ කොහොමද කියලා. මට ගොඩාක් පසුතැවීම් තියෙනවා. ඒවා මගේ සමාධියට හානි කරයි. ඉතින් කොහොමද පසුතැවීමෙන් ගොඩ එන්නේ කියලා. ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියන හැම එක්කෙනාටම පසුතැවීම් තියෙනවා. ඒ වගේම හැම එක්කෙනෙක්ම අතින් වැරදි සිද්ධ වෙලා තියෙනවා. ඒ වුණාට හිත ඇතුලේ තියෙනවා හොඳ කෙනෙක් වීමේ අවශ්‍යතාවය. අපි මේ දේවල් අපේ වැරදි අඩුපාඩු සංසාරින් ධම්ම ඇතැම් විට අරගෙන එන දේවල් ඒවා අපි කියලා කියන්නේ ප්‍රත්‍යයන්ගෙන් හැදුණු දෙයක් අපේ ඕනකමටම නෙවෙයි සමහර වෙලාවට අපි වැරදි කරන්නේ අපේ තියෙන ඇබ්බැහිකම් අනුව සංසාරින් ඉඳන් හැදිලා තියෙන විදිය අනුව ඉතින් ඒ විදිහට ඒ කල්පනා කරලා සිත ඒකෙන් මුදව ගන්නට ඕනේ පසුතැවීම් වලින් ඒ වගේම තවත් මේ උන්වහන්සේ කතාවක් කිව්වා අර පර්ත් වල එක්තරා මිනිස්සෙක් මෝහණය කරලා එයාගේ අතීත ආත්ම භාව සිහි කරන්න පුළුවන් අතීතයේ ආත්මයක් සිහි කරන්න පුළුවන් තත්වයට ඇවිල්ලා හොයලා බලනකොට එයා ගිය ආත්මෙත් කරලා තියෙන මේ ආත්මේ කරන දේවල්ම තමයි. ගිය ආත්මෙත් බොහොම වෙහෙස මහන්සි වෙලා වැඩ කරලා එයා බොහොම සාර්ථක පුද්ගලයෙක් බවට පත් වෙලා තියෙනවා. මේ ආත්මෙත් එයාගේ ව්‍යාපාරික කටයුතු වල ඉතාමත්ම සාර්ථක වෙලා තියෙනවා. පස්සේ මේ මෝහණය කිරීමෙන් පස්සේ එයා තේරුම් ගත්තා ඒ එයාගේ සාර්ථක වීමක් නෙවෙයි එයාගේ සංසාරයේ ඇබ්බැහිය කියලා. සංසාරින් ධම්ම එයා වීරියෙන් වැඩ කරන්න, වේගෙන් වැඩ කරන්න, සාර්ථකව වැඩ කරන්න ඇබ්බැහි වෙලා ඉඳලා තියෙනවා, හුරු වෙලා ඉඳලා තියෙනවා. ඒකම තමයි මේ ආත්මෙත් මේ ක්‍රියාත්මක වෙන්නේ. එහෙම නැතු එයාට ඕන කමටම නෙමෙයි. ඉතින් ඒ කාරණාව එයා තේරුම් ගත්තා මේ ආත්මේ තිබුණු ඕනවට වඩා තිබුණු උනන්දුව වීරිය එයා අතහැර දැම්මා. ඉතින් අන්න ඒ වගේ අපේ මේ වැරදි වලට අපි අතින් සිද්ධ වෙන වැරදි වලට මේ ආත්මේම නෙමෙයි මේ ආත්මේ දේවල්ම නෙමෙයි හේතු වෙන්නේ සංසාරේ ඉඳන් ඇබ්බැහි වෙලා එන දේවල් කියලා උන්වහන්සේ සඳහන් කරනවා. ඒ වගේම අපි අතින් වැරදි සිද්ධ වුණත් ඒවට වඩා වැඩියෙන් හොඳ දේවල් සිද්ධ කරලා අපිට ඒ වැරදි වලින් වැරදි යටපත් කරලා දාන්න පුළුවන්. මෙහිදී උන්වහන්සේ ලෝණපල සූත්‍රය මතක් කළා. ලෝණපල සූත්‍රය මේ බොහෝ දෙනෙක් අහලා තියෙන සූත්‍රයක්. ලුණු කැටයක් අරගෙන වතුර පොල් කට්ටකට වතුර වීදුරුවකට දැම්මොත් ඒ වතුර පොල් කට්ට එහෙම නැත්නම් වතුර වීදුරුව ලුණු රහ වෙනවා. නමුත් ලුණු කැටේම ගංගා ගඟට දැම්මොත් එහෙම ඒකෙන් ගංගා ගඟේ වතුරට කිසිම බලපෑමක් වෙන්නේ නැහැ. ඒ වගේ ඒ ලුණු කැටේ වගේ තමයි අපි කරන අපේ අතින් සිද්ධ වෙලා තියෙන අකුසල්. ඉතින් අකුසල් ඉක්මවා යන විශාල වශයෙන් කුසල් සිද්ධ කළා නම් ඒ අකුසල් වල බලය යටපත් වෙලා යනවා. ඒ අකුසල් වල බලපෑම අපේ හිතට දැනෙන්නේ නැතුව යනවා. ඒ නිසා මේ අපේ පසුතැවීම් ඒ වගේ ප්‍රශ්න විසඳා ගැනීමේදී තව තව හොඳ දේවල් කරනවා නම් කුසල් දහම් වල වැඩි වැඩියෙන් යෙදෙනවා නම් ඒ පසුතැවීම් හිතට එන්නේ නැතුව සමාධිමත් බව තව තවත් වර්ධනය කරගන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා.
Okay, so that next question here is about the Anendra Sankhara. So what is this type of Sankhara and how does it fit into the three types of Sankhara? So I have to admit my memory is a bit hazy, but I think the Anendra Sankharas are basically the Sankharas that relate to the immaterial realms, because once you get to the fourth jhana, your mind has reached a state of Anendra. Anendra, often translated into English as imperturbability, it means like you're really steady, right? Nothing can perturb you. Nothing can move the mind anymore. Your mind is like a rock, absolutely solid, imperturbable Anendra. And that is because, largely I think, because you have gone beyond feelings altogether. You've reached a stage beyond feeling where there's no sense of kind of being moved by feelings anymore. So I think that what is meant by that is the sankharas that lead to a rebirth in immaterial realm. That's what I seem to recall. But anyway, yes, that's what I think.
Me ta prashnaya kahano aninjabi sankharya nu monawada kiyala. සයින්ස් ප්‍රකාශ කරනවා ඒවා අරූපාවචර ධ්‍යාන විය හැකියි කියලා. ඊටසේ අරූපාවචර ධ්‍යානවල තියෙන ස්වභාවය උන්වහන්සේ පැහැදිලි කළේ ආනිඤ්ඤාපි සංකාර කියන්නේ එක්කෝ එහෙම නැත්නම් අරූපාවචර ලෝකවල උපදීම පිණිස සකස් කරන සංස්කාර එහෙම නැත්නම් අරූපාවචර ධ්‍යාන වැඩිම තමයි අරූප ආනිඤ්ඤාපි සංකාර කියලා කියන්නේ.
Okay. Dear Venerable Ramali, welcome back. Okay, thank you very much. In yesterday's talk, you said that eliminating the senses, the sense pleasures, does not eliminate craving. Please explain this further. Okay, I'll just stop there and I'll read the rest afterwards. So remember that the craving is a much more profound thing than just about the senses. I mentioned today about the craving for existence, even more profound. And as long as the craving for existence is there, you will get reborn. So you can eliminate the craving for sense pleasures temporarily, right? That's what samadhi is all about. That is what getting reborn in the samadhi realms is all about. But it's a temporary thing, and unless you uproot the defilements in a more deep way, they will return. There's a difference between temporary liberation and final and absolute liberation. So as long as you haven't uprooted fully, they may return again.
මේ ඊය කතා කළා මේ පංචකාමයන් පිළිබඳව සම්පූර්ණ ආශාව සම්පූර්ණ ඉවත් කිරීම පිළිබඳව ඊයේ කිව්වා පංචකාමයන් පිළිබඳ ආශාව ඉවත් කළේ නැත්නම් තණ්හාව සම්පූර්ණ ඉවත් කරන්න බැහැ කියලා. ඒ කාරණාව තවදුරටත් පැහැදිලි කරන්න කියලා ඉල්ලා සිටිනවා.
Okay, so yeah, so it's good. It's obviously very important to eliminate the craving for sense pleasures because this is what gives you access to samadhi, right? So you're certainly on the right track. But it is not the final elimination of things. So then you say that I have tried to reduce cravings by letting go of many sense pleasures, such as music, the art, socializing, etc. I don't know if this has helped my progress, but I find letting go relatively easy to do for most things. Please explain, does one fill the gaps with other pleasures? Much merit to you. Okay, so yes, one of the things, be careful not to use too much force in trying to let go of things. Sometimes we can be too idealistic and we say, oh, put it all aside, get rid of all the sense pleasures. From now on, I'm just going to live on white rice and water, not enjoy myself at all, right, and live a really miserable existence. But actually, that is not the right way to do it. It should be a natural letting go of these pleasures. It should be the mind inclining in a different direction, and you actually lose interest in a fairly natural way. So don't just eliminate everything by an act of will. Feel for yourself what comes quite naturally, and then eliminate that in that way. Try to understand where the coarser defilements are. Eliminate the coarser things first, and still allow yourself some of the more refined things, right? Sometimes, as you know, if you come back home after a long day's work and you feel a bit stressed and tired, sometimes you can put on some gentle music, maybe some Buddhist chanting, maybe some music which isn't very stimulating, just to calm you down and to feel better. The sense pleasures have a vast range. Some are very refined, some are very coarse. Sometimes you can use the more refined ones to abandon the coarser ones, right? So be wise about this. Don't be too idealistic. Understand what is really, what works on the path and what doesn't. So this is an important thing. And many of the things that you mentioned here, again, it's good to reduce some socializing. I would agree with that, because a lot of socializing isn't all that, doesn't have much point to it. You know, cocktail parties and these kind of things. You wonder why people do that sort of stuff. It seems like a waste of time. I remember a time when I went to these things, and many, many years ago. But again, a little bit of socializing is often necessary. We feel a need for contact with other people, right? Just to smile to somebody, say something nice to somebody, hear something nice in return. Sometimes this is required. Even in monastic life, we need a little bit of socializing, a little bit of interaction with other people. So know the right balance, know the right way to go about it. Find that balance, and then you're heading in the right direction. Don't use too much force with these things. It's important to enjoy life, right? If life becomes miserable, we're kind of missing out on the whole thing. And of course, to fill the gap, ideally how you want to fill the gaps is that you want to move on to a different type of pleasure. You want to move away from the pleasures of the senses and fill it up with the spiritual pleasures instead. The pleasures of being kind, the pleasures of being generous, the pleasures of having a good heart, the pleasure of sitting back and saying, whoa, how nice it is just to sit here and be peaceful, right? To feel a sense of goodness inside of you. There's a wonderful simile which I usually like to teach on this retreat. It's found in the Balapandita Sutra, Majjhima Nikaya 129. And this is another simile of the mountain. There are many mountain similes in the suttas. And mountains always make an impact on the mind. They're very big and powerful. And the mountain simile here is like, he says it's just like in the evening when the sun goes down behind the mountain, that mountain casts a shadow over the land in front of it, and it completely envelops, completely surrounds, completely encloses that land in the shadow. In exactly the same way, if a person is somebody who has a good heart, who does what is good, habitually does good actions by body, speech and mind, it's like you have made a mountain of good actions for yourself. And because you have made a mountain for good actions for yourself, when you come home in the evening and you sit down and you relax, this is just for ordinary lay people, right? An ordinary person. It, of course, is true for monastics as well, but it's true for everyone. When you come home in the evening and you relax, you sit down in your favorite chair, you lie down on the bed and you relax, that mountain comes back to you. That mountain comes back and it envelops you. It completely surrounds you. And you have to feel happy. You have to feel a sense of joy as a consequence of that. So the idea here is we fill our lives with so many good qualities that there is a natural happiness, a natural gladness that arises in our mind as a consequence of the mountain of good deeds.
Then me prasne itiru kota sir. දැන් ඒ ප්‍රශ්නය අහන එක්කින අහනවා දැන් එයා පංචකාමයන් ඒ වගේ දේවල් අත්හැර දමමින් ඉන්නවා ඒ හිදස පුරවන්න වෙන දේවල් වලින් පුරව ගන්න ඕනේද කියලා. ඉතින් ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ කියනවා ඔව් එහෙම තමයි පංචකාමයන් අත්හැර දානකොට ඒ හිදස කුසල ධර්මයන්ගෙන් පුරව ගන්නට ඕනේ කියලා. ඒ වගේම පංචකාමයන්ටයි දේවල් අත්හැර දැම කියන එකත් හදිසි වෙන්නේ නැතුව කලබල වෙන්නේ නැතුව නුවණින් කල්පනා කරලා බලලා හොඳට තේරුම් අරගෙන කළ යුතු දෙයක්. එකපාරට න්‍යායාත්මකව හදිසි වෙලා එහෙම කරන්න යන හොඳ නැහැ. එතකොට ජීවිතේ කිසියම් අවුලක් ඇති වෙන්න පුළුවන්. එහෙම නෙවෙයි හොඳට හිතලා බලලා ක්‍රමානුකූලව හීන් සීරුවේ ඒක කළ යුතු දෙයක්. ඒ වගේම පංචකාමයන් අතහරිනවා නම් ඒ වෙනුවට වෙන කුසල ධර්මයන් සුචරිත ධර්මයන්ගෙන් ජීවිතේ පුරව ගන්නට ඕනේ. ඒ හිදස වැහෙන්න ඒ කුසල ධර්මයන්ගෙන් සිත පුරව ගත්තාම අර පංචකාමයන්ගෙන් ලැබුණු ආස්වාදයේ වෙනුවට වෙනත් ආස්වාදයක් කුසල සහගත ආස්වාදයක් ලබන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා. උන්වහන්සේ මේ බාලපඬිත් සූත්‍රයේ තියෙන උපමාවක් අරගෙන පෙන්නවා. බාලපඬිත් සූත්‍රයේ තියෙනවා විශාල කන්දක්. ඒ කන්දට එහා පැත්තෙන් ඉර බැහැල යනකොට ඒ කන්දේ හෙවණැල්ලෙන් ඉදිරි මුළු බිම් ප්‍රදේශයම වැහිලා යනවා. ඒ වගේම මේ ගිහි ජීවිත ගත කරන අයත් පිනෙන් පිරෙනවා නම් කුසල කර්ම ගොඩාක් සිද්ධ කරගෙන තියෙනවා නම් ඒගොල්ලෝ විවේකයෙන් ඉන්න වෙලාවට හවස වැඩේරිලා ඇවිල්ලා ගෙදර විවේකයෙන් ඉන්න වෙලාවට කල්පනා කරනකොට තමන් කරපු කුසල ධර්මයන්ගෙන් තමන්ගේ මුළු ජීවිතයම ආවරණය වෙනවා. ඒකෙන් කුසලයෙන් පිරීලා යනවා. ඉතින් ආන්නේ වගේ පංචකාමයන් යම් ප්‍රමාණයක් අතහරිනවා නම් ඒ පංචකාමයන්ගෙන් ලැබුණු ආස්වාදය වෙනුවට ලබන්න වෙනත් ආස්වාදයක් කුසල ධර්මයන් සිද්ධ කරලා රැස් කරගන්නට ඕනේ. එහෙම නැත්නම් ජීවිතයේ කිසියම් අපහසුතාවයක් හිස් බවක් ඇති වෙන්න ඉඩ තියෙනවා.
Okay. So, next question. This question, handwriting is so large I can read it without my glasses. That makes me feel really good. So, dear Bhante, can you please explain the difference between punya and kusala according to the suttas? And it's quite strange. I just got an email from a very senior monk who lives in Burma just a few days ago, and he was asking me exactly the same question. So I'm not sure if that is some kind of what's going on there, but isn't there a difference? And I think the way it is, I haven't really looked at this very carefully, so this will just be my kind of feeling about this. And my sense is that punya is usually made in respect of getting a good rebirth, right? Where we're heading in the future. In the suttas, the punya is often, what is it, divided up between, what is it, dana, sila, and bhavana, or something like that? I think punya. So it's all about, but it's mostly about how to get a good rebirth. And that's why I think it is translated as merit. You are deserving of some happiness in the future. How to get happiness in the future. Kusala, I think, is a broader idea. I think kusala also has to do with all those acts that also lead eventually to nibbana, right? If you do something which leads to nibbana, it's not about rebirth anymore, it's about going beyond rebirth, then it is still kusala. So kusala is broader. It's also about insight, also about the deepest aspects of the path. That is my kind of off the top of my head, and hopefully reasonably accurate.
තව ප්‍රශ්නයක් අහනවා, පුණ්‍ය සහ කුසල කියන දෙකේ වෙනසක් තියෙනවද කියලා. උන්වහන්සේගේ අදහසට අනුව උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා පුණ්‍ය කියලා කියන්නේ හොඳ ආත්මයක්, හොඳ පුනරුත්පත්තියක්, හොඳ පුනර්භවයක් ලැබීම පිණිස වෙන කටයුතු. දාන, සීල, භාවනා ආදිය පුණ්‍ය වශයෙන් උන්වහන්සේ හඳුන්වන්න කැමැති. ඒ වගේම ඍජුවම නිවනට බලපාන කාරණා කුසල් වශයෙන් හඳුන්වන්න කැමැති. ඒ කුසල් කියන එක වඩා විශාල, එහෙම නැත්නම් වඩා පළල් සංකල්පයක් කියලා උන්වහන්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කරනවා.
Okay. So next question, dear Bhante, is there a difference between jhana and samadhi? Can you please explain that? So, difference between the two is that samadhi is any kind of experience which is very profound in meditation, right? Any kind of experience where the mind is very stilled. Samadhi means something like non-distraction. It means like full focus on the object of attention or whatever. And it can refer to the four jhanas. It can refer to the immaterial states. It can refer to things like the Animitta Samadhi, Sunyata Samadhi, and Apanita Samadhi. And it can it is a broader idea, the idea of samadhi. It can refer to many things. Jhana is more like a specific type of samadhi, the specific type of samadhi which is Samma Samadhi on the Buddhist path. So that is really the distinction. Samadhi is a little bit broader, jhana is a little bit more specific. But it is important also to realize that when you read the suttas, the type of samadhi that is talked about in the suttas the most, by a large, large margin the most, is the jhana. So this is by far the most important type of samadhi in the suttas. So sometimes when you read the passage and the Buddha just uses the word samadhi, normally you can assume that he is talking about the jhanas, perhaps a slightly broader idea.
තව ප්‍රශ්නයක් ඇති වුණා, මේ ධ්‍යාන සහ සමාධිය අතර වෙනස පැහැදිලි කරන්න කියලා. උන්වහන්සේ පැහැදිලි කරනවා, භාවනාව තුළ ඇතිවන ඕනම හොඳ තත්ත්වයක් සමාධි කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන් කියලා. නොයෙක් සමාධි වර්ග තියෙනවා, අනිමිත්ත සමාධි, අප්පනිත සමාධි, ශුන්‍යත සමාධි ආදී වශයෙන්. සමාධි කියන්නේ හොඳට හිත යොමු වීමක්, හිත එකඟ වීමක්, හිත තැම්පත් වීමක් වගේ දෙයක්. නමුත් ධ්‍යාන කියලා කිව්වම ඊට වඩා විශේෂ ආකාරයකට සිත එකඟ වීමක්, විශේෂ ආකාරයකට සිත තැන්පත් වීමක් ධ්‍යාන කියලා කිව්වහම කිසියම් සමාධි කියන එකට වඩා විශේෂ තත්වයක් තියෙනවා. බුදුරජාණන් වහන්සේ හැබැයි සමාධි කියලා කියන අවස්ථාවවලදී බොහෝ කොටම ධ්‍යාන අදහස් කරලා තියෙනවා.
Okay. Abhante, when one intends, it becomes one's karma, which leads to rebirth. So how do the sankharas come to rebirth? Or is it with sankhara that create karma that leads to rebirth? Please kindly explain. Okay, I'm not 100% sure what you mean by this, but you remember the idea is that, yes, sankharas, you do all these activities, it stations your mind at a certain level, that leads to rebirth. And when, because the mind is stationed at that level, we're going to have a look at this tomorrow, and that leads to rebirth, it means that the experiences you have when you get reborn there will depend on the level of rebirth, right? So if your sankhara is pointing you towards a jhanic rebirth in a jhana realm, then those experiences you have in that new realm will be decided by the fact that you have been reborn in a jhana realm. So whatever is the level of consciousness that you have when you get reborn, that level of consciousness will decide what kind of experiences you can have. So if you get reborn in a very high kind of realm, your sankharas will be accordingly. So if you get reborn in a jhana realm, no sankharas really, right? You get reborn in a slightly less refined realm, there will be sankharas which are aimed at that particular realm. If you get reborn in the human realm, you have human sankharas, human volitions, human wills that are kind of common in the human realm. So all the khandhas, all which is called nama rupa in this case, their limits and their boundaries will be set by where consciousness establishes itself in the future life.
ඒ ප්‍රශ්නේ තේරුම් ගන්න ටිකක් අමාරු ප්‍රශ්නයක්. අපි ඒ නිසා ඒ ප්‍රශ්නේ පැත්තකින් තියමු.
Okay, that's very quick. Wow, pretty professional translator. Okay, that's good. Okay, so this is a question, dear Bhante. Please explain the two paths of vipassana, purvangama samatha and samatha purvangama vipassana. So this is this is referring to a particular sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya 4, where Venerable Ananda is teaching, giving a teaching, and it refers to that particular sutta. It talks about these particular paths, where vipassana comes first, and then sammata afterwards, or sammata first, and then sammata first, vipassana was, or vipassana first, and sammata afterwards. So I guess it is important to understand this kind of idea is very rare in the suttas. It's really only found there in a couple of other places in that way. But the idea here has to do with emphasis, right? Emphasis in your meditation practice. So you emphasize certain things that have more to do with clarity, and you emphasize things that have more to do with samatha. So, vipassana might be developing certain perceptions in your meditation practice, doing things like trying to, understand anicca and anatta or whatever straight away based on what you have now. And samatha perhaps more like doing things like just watching the breath or whatever. But remember, these things are matters of emphasis, right? If the vipassana works and you actually get some insight, it will also make you peaceful. Insight has to make you peaceful, because insight means that you let go. That is the very purpose of insight, to allow you to let go. When you let go, you feel peaceful. If you feel peaceful, it means that if you have success in your samatha meditation, you feel peaceful. It means that the defilements are declining. When the defilements are declining, you see more clearly, so you have more vipassana. So these things always go hand in hand, and this is just a matter of emphasis, really, whether you do one before the other or the other one afterwards. There's no absolute distinction between the two. Samatha and vipassana always have to go hand in hand, and the reason they have to go hand in hand is because the cause for samatha is the same as the cause for vipassana. What is the cause for samatha? the reduction of the defilements. If you have less defilements, samatha improves. What is the cause for vipassana? A reduction in the defilements. Because as the defilements reduce, you see things more clearly. That's my preferred translation of vipassana, seeing things clearly here. So because the causes for the two are the same, it means they have to go hand in hand. They have to arise together here. So again, this is just a matter of emphasis and not a matter of some absolute difference in practice.
ප්‍රශ්නයක් ඇහුවා මේ සමත පුබ්බංගම විපස්සනායි විපස්සනා පුබ්බංගම සමතයි කියන මේ කාරණාව පැහැදිලි කරන්න කියලා. උන්වහන්සේ දේශනා කරනවා ඒක අපි අවධානය යොමු කරන ආකාරය අනුව සිද්ධ වෙන දෙයක් කියලා. සමතයට අවධානය යොමු කිරීම වැඩි වුණාම ඒක සමත පුබ්බංගම විපස්සනා කියනවා. විපස්සනාට අවධානය යොමු කිරීම වැඩි වුණාම ඒක විපස්සනා පුබ්බංගම සමත කියලා කියනවා. සාමාන්‍යයෙන් අපි දන්න හැටියට විපස්සනා කියලා කිව්වම අනිච්ච දුක්ඛ අනාත්ම ආදී වශයෙන් වටහා ගැනීම විපස්සනා කියනවා. ඒ වගේම ආනාපාන සතියට සිත යොමු කරනවා නම් ඒක සමතය කියලා කියන්න පුළුවන්. කොහොම නමුත් මේ දෙකෙන්ම සිද්ධ වෙන්නේ කෙලෙස් යටපත් වීම කියන එක. කෙලෙස් යටපත් වෙච්ච ගමන්ම සිතේ වැඩිම සිද්ධ වෙනවා. ඒ කියන්නේ සමතය තුලිනු සිද්ධ වෙන්නේ කෙලෙස් යටපත් වීම. ඒ වගේම විපස්සනාව තුළිනුත් කෙලෙස් යටපත් වීම සහ කෙලෙස් ප්‍රහාණය වීම සිද්ධ වෙනවා. මේ දෙකම එකිනෙක අත්වල් බැඳගෙන ගමන් කරන දෙකක්. මේ දෙකම එකටම ගමන් කළ යුතුයි, සමතයත් විපස්සනාවත්.
Okay. Next one. Devante, today you showed how sila is helpful to improve upon samadhi. If a monk tries to meditate with less mistakes, especially with Sangha Dissesa, will he be able to reach samadhi? With less mistake, I guess you mean with some mistake or something like that? With, for example, a Sangha Dissesa offense, will you be able to reach samadhi if you have that Sangha Dissesa offense? To be honest with you, I don't really know the answer to that. I know that traditionally people always do purification ceremonies before they go to meditate to, you know, to purify themselves of any mistakes, to improve the chances of reaching samadhi. I don't think the suttas give any final answer on these things, whether it's impossible to reach samadhi by committing a Sangha Dissesa offense or not. But remember that these things are considered very seriously in the suttas. When the Buddha talks about, there's one place in the Anguttara Nikaya where the Buddha talks about the Parajika Sangha Dissesa, Pachitya and Patidesaniya offenses. And this Parajika is like death, right? You had it. Sangha Dissesa is almost like death, very close to dying as a consequence of doing that. So it is going to have a very powerful impact on your mind when you do that. It obviously also depends on which Sangha Dissesa. It depends on many other factors as well. So it is very hard to give any absolute, apt or final judgment on that. But it is certainly going to be a hindrance. Whether it is absolutely impossible or not is very difficult to say, but it's going to be a hindrance, and for that reason, it is very, very important to try to avoid these kind of offenses. But you learn, if you make a mistake, it's okay, right? It's nothing, you shouldn't punish yourself, everybody makes mistakes, and then you carry on, and then you try better in the future. So also don't punish yourself for falling into offenses, just acknowledge that, and then move on, and then try better in the future.
ශීලය පිළිබඳව අද කතා කළා. අපි ශීලය භාවනාවට උපකාර වෙනවා කියන කාරණාව කතා කළා. ඒ අනුව මේ සංඝාදිශේසාපත්ති නැත්තම් ඒක භාවනාවට හොඳයි නේද කියලා අහුවා වගේ මට තේරුණේ. ඉතින් උන්වහන්සේ කියනවා මේ බුදුරජාන් වහන්සේ අංගුත්තර නිකායේ මේ ආපත්‍ති කාණ්ඩ කතා කරලා තිය සාකච්ඡා කරලා තියෙනවා. පරාජික ආදී මරණය වගේ සංඝාදිශේසත් ටිකක් ඒකට කිට්ටුයි වගේ. ඉතින් කොහොම නමුත් මේ ආපත්‍ති නැති තරමට ඒක සීලයට හොඳයි. නමුත් උන්වහන්සේ ඍජුවම උත්තරයක් දෙන්නේ නැහැ. වැරදි සිද්ධ වෙන්න පුළුවන්, ඒවා නිවැරදි කරගෙන ඉදිරියට යන්න පුළුවන්. Tamanට දඬුවම් දෙන්න කල්පනා කරන්න අවශ්‍ය නැහැ. වැරදි සකස් කරගනිමින් ඉදිරියට යන්න පුළුවන්කම තියෙනවා.
Okay, dear Ajahn Brahmali, could you please say something about craving for extermination? I can. And it's one of those cravings, right? Oh, I've had enough. I don't want any more. Life is just so terrible. It is so bad. I just want to get out of here. When I die, I want this to be the end, finished, finito. And I think perhaps it is possible that, you know, modern materialist ideas that the mind is just a consequence of material phenomena, maybe that comes in part from the craving for extermination. People just don't want to exist anymore. Life is just too much suffering, too many problems. When I die, I just want to be peaceful forever, have nothing more to do with anything here. And I remember there was one monk that I know quite well, and Venerable Nisarana knows quite well as well. And he told me, I remember once, about an auntie of his. And he was speaking to this auntie, and he was telling this auntie about, you know, the Buddhist idea of rebirth. And she said, oh no, I really don't want to be reborn, right? I've had enough. This life has been difficult enough. Don't want to continue into the future. And that is like the craving for extermination. But of course, the kind of the tragic thing in a sense is that if you crave for that, that craving itself is a craving which leads to rebirth. Right, so you want to be exterminated, but actually that very desire stops you from ending things, stops you from coming to an end. And the reason is because it's just like craving for existence. When you crave for existence, you're craving for some kind of future state. I want to be like this in the future. You are aiming for something. Your purpose is something in the future. When you are craving for extermination, it's exactly the same thing. You are aiming for a future state, or a future non-state, if you like. And that is your aim, that is your purpose, that is where your sankharas are pointing. And because of that, you're actually projecting yourself into the future, and for this reason, you are keeping going as a consequence. So even that doesn't work, right? That is kind of the last. But one of the nice things about, or one of the good things about the craving for extermination, the Buddha says it's called the Uccedavada in the suttas. Uccedavada, vada is doctrine, Ucceda is like extermination, if you like, annihilation. It is the good thing about that, it is quite close to the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha says that of all the external views, all the views outside of Buddhism, the Uccedavada is the one which is the highest, because it comes, and he says the reason is because at the very least, you don't have any craving for existence when you have that view. I think that's what he said, craving for existence you don't have. So it's easier for you to understand the benefit or the good thing which comes out of the Buddhist idea of Nirodha, which is cessation. So Uccedavada, annihilation, and the Buddhist idea of cessation are two different things. In the Uccedavada, you are projecting yourself into the future, you are desiring a future state. The Buddhist idea of cessation is just the idea that you know that when I practice in this way, things will cease. You don't have any craving for that cessation, but you know the consequence of your practice will be cessation at some point in the future. There's no self there anymore, and because of that, there's no craving for this to arise.
ප්‍රශ්නය ඊගාවට ඇහුවේ මේ විභව තණ්හාව ගැන පැහැදිලි කරන්න කියලා. විභව තණ්හාව ගැන යමක් කියන්න කියලා. ඉතින් විභව තණ්හාව කියලා කියන්නේ විභව තණ්හාව නිසා තමයි මැරුණහම එතනින් ඔක්කොම ඉවරයි කියලා මැරුණහම ඔක්කොම ඉවර වෙනවා නම් හොඳයි කියන ආශාව තමයි විභව තණ්හාව කියන්නේ. ඉදිරියට මොකුත් යන්නේ නැත්තම් මේ දුක් කරදර ඔක්කොම මරණින් ඉවර වෙනවා නම් හොඳයි කියලා හිතන එක තමයි විභව තණ්හාව කියලා කියන්නේ. මේ එක්තරා මේ හාමුදුරු කෙනෙක්ගේ නැන්ද කෙනෙක්කුත් බුද්ධ ආගමේ මතු උපදිනවා කියලා එකක් තියෙනවා කියලා දැනගන්න ලැබිලා කිව්වලු. අපෝ මට නම් ආයි ඉපදින්න ඕනේ නැහැ. දැන් මේ හොඳටම ඇති මේ ඉපදිලා හිටියේක ආයි ඕනේ නැහැ කියලා කිව්වලු. ආන් මේ වගේ තමයි මේ විභව තණ්හාව කියන්නේ. මතු නොඉපදී ඉන්න තියෙන ආශාව. නමුත් ඒකේ මේ බුද්ධ ආගමේ තියෙන දැන් නිරෝධයත් එක්ක උන්වහන්සේ ඒක සංසන්දනය කළා. නිරෝධය කියලා කියන්නේ එහෙම ආශාවක් නෙමෙයි. මේ අවබෝධය නිසා, මේ පුහුණුව නිසා, මේ විදිහට පුහුණු වීමෙන් මතු දුක හටගන්නේ නැහැ කියන අවබෝධය තමයි නිරෝධය පිළිබඳ තියෙන අවබෝධය. විභව තණ්හාව කියන්නේ එහෙම නෙවෙයි, මතු නොවේවා කියලා තියෙන ආශාව, නොවේවා කියලා කරන ප්‍රාර්ථනාව. ඒක උච්ඡේද දික්තිය හා සම්බන්ධ කැමැත්තක්, උච්ඡේද දිට්ඨිය හා සම්බන්ධ වූ ආශාව තමයි විභව තණ්හාව කියලා කියන්නේ. උච්ඡේද දිට්ඨිය කියලා කියන්නේ මෙතනින් පස්සේ සිඳිලා යනවා. ආයි මොකුත් නැහැ කියන අන්නේ දෘෂ්ටිය තමයි උච්ඡේද දිට්ඨිය කියලා කියන්නේ. ඒ දෘෂ්ටිය පදනම් කරගත්ත ආශාව තමයි විභව තණ්හාව කියලා කියන්නේ.
Okay. Should we do one or two maybe? Yeah. Okay. And then we can maybe start with the Sinhala questions tomorrow or something here. Okay. Let's do one or two, just to, otherwise it's really unfair to the people who are writing in Sinhala. So, okay.
Me prasnyak kahala tino dhirga prasnyak maan Sinhala ma kiyo anna isyellama. Iru babalanne vivurta uvite, sandhu babalanne vivurta uvite, Sri Saddharme babalanne idu vivurta uvite. ඔබතුමා ඇතුළේ විවිධාකාරයෙන් සහසම්බන්ධව මේ ධර්මයේ ලෝක සත්‍යයට විවෘත කර බෙදා දීම ප්‍රශංසනීය ජනකය. බුදුදහම තවදුරටත් চিරාත් කාලයක් පැවැත්වීමටද මේ උපකාර වේ. නිවන කරා යන ගමනට මඟ පෙන්වීම විවර කිරීම අතිශය ප්‍රශංසනීය. තව තවත් මෙවැනි කටයුතු කිරීමට හැකි වේවා. සියලු දෙනාටම මේ ගෞතම බුදු සසුනේදී උතුම් චතුරාර්ය සත්‍ය ධර්මයේ අවබෝධ වේවා කියලා කියනවා. ඉතින් Bhante, this is actually not a question, it's a praise.
He's praising. Okay. Even better than a question, right? Yeah.
Okay. Tawat e wagen prashnayak thiyena me wedasathana ita shreshtha prayogika wedasathanaki e sandaha ita ayata sitha wedama karanta yedunu Ajahn Brahmali Therun wahanseeta nawatha nawatha hrudayangama kusala anumodan karami මේ සඳහා දායකත්වයේ දක්වන හැම දිනාටමත් මේ භවයේම ධර්ම අවබෝධ ලැබේවා කියා පින් අනුමෝදන් කරමි. This is also a praise to you.
Okay. Okay, very good.
Previous one, it is said, when sun when the sun open up, then sunshine. And the moon also opens up, when it opens up, then it is shine. Same way, Dhamma opens up when Dhamma shines. So you and other all others get together and opening up the Dhamma and making the Dhamma shine.
Okay.
So because of that, the question, the person who is asking question, praising you.
Okay, very good. Okay, excellent.
අපේ භාවනාව දියුණු කර ගැනීමට මෙම ස්ථානයේ ආරමක් කරගෙන අපටද සහභාගී වීමට අවස්ථාව ලබා දීම ගැන මෙහෙණියක් වශයෙන් මම ඉතාම සතුටු වන අතර අපට අවස්ථාව ලබා දුන් පින්වත් හැම දිනාට පින් අනුමෝදන් කරමි. ලැබුණු දින 10 තුළ නිවන් මාගේ ගමන් කිරීමට මා උත්සාහ ගනිමි. මගේ ජීවිතයේ මෙබඳු පරිසරයකට භාවනාව සහභාගී වීමට පෙර පිනක් යයි සිතමි. අපට මේ සත්මගේ යාමට දානමාන ආදී සිව්පස්ය ලබා දෙන සැමටත් උපස්ථාන කරන සෑම දිනකටත් පින් දෙමි. අපට භාවනා උපදෙස් දෙන ධර්ම දේශනා ලබා දෙමින් දුර රටක සිට පැමිණි ගරු ස්වාමින් වහන්සේටත් අපට විශාල සිංහලට පරිවර්තනය කර දෙමින් මඟ පෙන්වන ගරු ස්වාමින් වහන්සේටත් ඉතා ගෞරවයෙන් පින් දෙමි. It's also kind of praising and transferring merits to you and all the people who arranged this program.
Okay, great, wonderful. It's always very nice to say nice things to everybody, so that's very kind. That's great. Okay.
And this one.
Yeah.
සීලය තුල ඇති සතුට විඳීමට නම් සීලය සමගම මෙත්තා කරුණා මුදිතා උපේක්ඛා යන බ්‍රහ්ම විහරණ වැඩි යුතු බව කියුණා. ඒ දෙක අතර ඇති සම්බන්ධය පැහැදිලි කර දෙන්න. බන්තේ to enjoy the happiness of සීලය one has to develop metta karuna mudita and upekkha and he is asking what is the combination or what is the relationship in between metta karuna mudita and sila.
Okay. Yes, it is good to, of course, very good to develop these things. It's very useful to do. And as you kind of pointing out here, the relationship really is that sila is the foundation for these things. It's impossible to develop any of the Brahma Viharas without sila. Sila has to be the foundation. As I was saying yesterday, to be able to develop these things, you actually have to play them out. You have to do them in practice, first of all. You have to act with metta. You have to act with compassion, right? You have to think with metta, think with compassion. Speak with metta, speak with compassion. Especially as a monastic, you do it to your fellow monastics. And as lay people, you do it to your fellow lay people, the people who are closest to you, sometimes the most important ones. Then you have a nice and harmonious community. And when everything is harmonious, the bhavana, the practice of meditation, becomes much more easy. So that is the foundation, right? And if you neglect that foundation, there is no way that you will be able to practice the Brahma Viharas. So first of all, in speech, in action, and then thought. And then, when you do that over a long period of time, then you can sit down and you can practice these things in your meditation practice.
Me metta karuna mudita wala pasu padanama seelayai kiyalai unwanhase kiyanne. Seelaya nathuwa මෙත්තා කරුණා මුදිතා උපේක්ෂා ආදිය වැඩෙන්නේ නැහැ. ඒ වගේම මේ කටයුතු කරද්දී එකිනෙකා අතර වචනෙන් කයින් කටයුතු කරද්දී සිතින් කයින් වචනෙන් කටයුතු කරද්දී මෛත්‍රියෙන් කරුණාවෙන් වැඩ කරනවා නම් එතකොට තමයි භාවනාව වැඩෙන්නේ භාවනාව සාර්ථක වෙන්නේ එතකොටයි කියලායි උන්වහන්සේ ප්‍රකාශ කරන්නේ.
And also was it about the relationship between the four? Was that also part of the question? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so just very briefly about the relationship between the four is that it is always explained in the suttas in the same way, always metta first, then karuna, then mudita, then upekkha, always the same sequence. And remember that the way the Buddha teaches the Dhamma, it is always every list, every sequence has a purpose. Nothing is random. Nothing is kind of just put together in a haphazard way. Everything is very significant in the teaching of the Buddha. So the fact that metta comes first, I think, is a very clear indication that metta is the most important of the four Brahma Viharas and the one we should develop first. And indeed, when you read the suttas, it's metta that is talked about most often. It is the most important thing here. So I would recommend you to try metta first of all. One of the reasons for that is because metta is always about looking at the good qualities in others. It's about wishing them well based on those good qualities. Whereas karuna, for example, is more about wanting to alleviate suffering. And because it is about alleviating suffering, you are closer to suffering and it's more easy to feel a bit kind of, if you look at it in the wrong way, you see the suffering and you don't experience the karuna. It's more dangerous, more difficult to do. Whereas the metta is more very positive all the way through, looking at good qualities and also wishing somebody well. And that's why I think it is the basic practice of the four Brahma Viharas.
Metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha kiyana me hatare ekthara piliwelakata tamai Buddharajanase pela gassala thiyenne. E piliwelatama තමයි ඒක තිබෙන්න ඕනේ. මෛත්‍රිය තමයි ඉතාම වැදගත් මුලින්ම තියෙන්න ඕන දෙය. මෛත්‍රිය තුලින් අනිත් පුද්ගලයා කෙරෙහි මිත්‍රශීලීව බලනවා. ඒ වගේම කරුණාවෙන් ඒගොල්ලන්ගේ වැරදි වලට සමාව එහෙම නැත්නම් කරුණාවෙන් ඒගොල්ලන්ගේ දුක් දුරු කරන්න කටයුතු කරනවා. ඉතින් ඒ ආකාරයෙන් කටයුතු කිරීමෙන් තමයි මේ මෙත්තා කරුණා මුදිතා වර්ධනය වෙන්නේ.
Okay, I think that's enough for today. Otherwise, it's going to be a long night. Maybe tomorrow we can start with the Sinhala questions. Is that a good idea?
Okay.
So that we can start with them, so that everybody gets a fair treatment here. So that's all for today, and I'll see you again tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Have a nice night. Continue enjoying yourself, and we'll see you then.